Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on... wait a minute, I might have to clear my throat. Hold on, keep the music on. That's better. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Hope you're going to hang out with us for a while tonight. Thanks to Sam Cedar, who sat in for me Monday? Yeah, last night, right, as we... made our way back from San Diego. Met some really good people in San Diego. Thanks to everybody for the great hospitality that that you showed to us. I really do appreciate it. I'm going to focus a little bit tonight on Ahmadinejad because he's all over the news and because the Bush crime family, most notably being pushed by Dick Cheney, is lusting after war with Iran, the country in which Ahmadinejad, of course, is the... figurehead president. Cheney wants this war as much as he wants. What does Cheney want, Kathy? As much as he wants more profit for Halliburton. How's that? And there's a very good chance that these countervailing forces that are at work right now within the Bush crime family, on the one hand pushing for a third invasion, a third war, and on the other hand, trying to stop these psychopaths from taking us into another war, which will absolutely, utterly, and probably for years into the future, destroy the United States military. So we're going to focus a little bit on Ahmadinejad, since he and Chucklenuts both addressed the UN today. And now I'm not a big Ahmadinejad fan. My God. But before we get to that... I don't know how low people can go in using the 9/11 brand. I don't know what else to call it. But how's this? Rudy Giuliani claims that, you know, this is all, oh, hey, man, I didn't know anything about it. But in California, tomorrow night, there's a fundraiser for Rudy. And the person giving this party, Abraham Sofer, is asking the people who attend to pay $9.11 per person. 9/11. Jesus, God. Now, apparently this is going on across the country, house parties across the country. Who did that? Howard Dean is the one who originally started that, way back when Dean was running for president, right? Sofer said he has nothing to do with the 9/11 for Rudy theme. He said when reached by telephone last night, there are some young people who came up with it. It's not me. Somebody else. So for a set of Giuliani, I'm just providing support for him. He's an old friend of mine. Now, you may remember Sofer. He was State Department advisor under Ronald Reagan and is now a fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. Federal election data shows that this guy has given nearly $50,000 to Republican causes and candidates, including Giuliani, over the past 10 or 11 years. Now, a spokeswoman for Giuliani said, these are two volunteers who acted independently of and without the knowledge of the campaign. Their decision to ask individuals for that amount was an unfortunate choice, end quote. Now, of course, there's no indication here that Rudy will turn it down or will say to the people who put this together at $9.11, oh, my God, you talk about blood money. Jesus, the Republicans have absolutely no limits, do they? How far they'll go? Absolutely no limits. But rather than Giuliani stepping out and say, what is this nonsense? Stop this. Well, of course not, because this has been Giuliani's only... selling point. The only way he can sell himself to these these snaggle-toothed, hardcore Republican thugs is the 9/11 thing. They don't like him because he likes to dress up like a woman. They don't like him because he's got gay friends. They don't like him because he believes in gun control. They don't like him because he believes a woman should have a privacy sphere around her where she can make a decision about abortion if she wants to or not. They don't like him for all these reasons. But you see, Rudy is borrowing from the Joseph Goebbels playbook just like Karl Rove did. Fear. Fear. I was the man. I was there. I walked into the inferno. Me. Vote for me. $9.11. Jesus, God. There's no limit. There's no limit to the depths that Republicans will sink. Bush was on television today. I couldn't pass it up. I had to see what his speechwriters handed him to read. And what they gave him, this is a guy who, as Robert Perry writes at consortiumnews.com, this is a guy who asserts his unlimited personal authority to kill, kidnap, torture, spy on anyone, anywhere in the world. Right? There are no habeas corpus protections. There are no protections. No way. This is a guy who set up secret detention camps. This is a guy whose former advisors and former Justice Department had recommended torture and legalized it. This is a lying, sneaky bastard, George Bush, who has zero respect for human rights. And what does he do? He gets in front of the United Nations and gives his speech by hailing the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, put together by members of the United Nations. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. And he stands there and does this without a hint of embarrassment or an awareness of the irony of what he's saying, or the fact that what he is saying is not only insulting and degrading and embarrassing to the American public, but also casts him as a moron, an idiot who the rest of the world understands what the United States does on Bush's watch. They understand that we torture, that we deny human rights, we spit on human rights. Human rights don't exist. The rest of the world understands when Bush says, oh, well, $20 billion for AIDS. He doesn't mean it. Where's the money? Oh, we're going to shift this. We're going to take a little from A and a little from B and put it over here in C. It doesn't mean new money, new appropriation. Bush is no more compassionate about people who are sick or hurting or needing shelter or clothing or food than the man in the moon. One word, Katrina! He's a liar. He's a thug. He's a punk. And there he stands today, hailing the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Oh, my God. Now, he said, and I'm quoting, achieving the promise of the Declaration requires confronting long-term threats. It also requires answering the immediate needs of today, including destruction of terrorist networks and, quote, bringing to justice their operatives, end quote. But Bush's vision of his divine right to kill whomever he judges to be a dangerous enemy flies in the face of the actual Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Whoever wrote this for Bush knows that there's very few of us, if any of us, who actually know what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is, when it was passed by the General Assembly, what it stands for, what it means. Oh, we have a vague idea, but and the writers of this asinine speech also understand that the American news media is so corrupted. They won't even bother to check what Bush says against the parameters laid out in this Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So Robert Perry did it for us. Among its 30 proclaimed rights are these. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. Security of person. Liberty. Okay. No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Ooh, Gosh, that sounds kind of weird. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, Diego Garcia, all the little torture gulags and caves and camps the Bush has set up. Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. What? A person before the law? That means if you arrest me, you have to produce evidence as to why you've arrested me. You have to do it in open court. You have to say, this is why you're in chains. Bush doesn't do that. No one, here's another one, no one shall be subjected to arbitrary arrest, detention, or exile. Oh, Jesus. The next one, everyone is entitled to, or entitled in full equality to a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial tribunal, like the U.S. military, in the determination of his rights and obligations, and of any criminal charges against him. Here's another one. Everyone charged with a penal offense has the right to be presumed innocent until proved guilty according to law in a public trial at which he has had all the necessary guarantees for his defense. Wow. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondence. Think about the FISA law. Think about the violation of the FISA law. Nor to attacks upon his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attacks. Wow. Everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression, unless you attend a Bush rally. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information or ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. Now, this is what Bush said today is the foundation for the rule of law. He hailed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This son of a bitch violates every single tenet of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, every single one, and yet his speechwriters send him out there today to make this kind of a speech in front of the rest of the world. Astonishing.
You know, one of the things we looked for over there in Africa was whether or not countries could absorb money.
Yeah. Whether or not Africa could absorb money. Okay. So there was Bush today talking about human rights. And with his disingenuous, fake, lying, sneaky, Nazi-like, so-called war on terror, Bush has violated, if not every single right laid out in this declaration, he has certainly violated some that people haven't thought of yet. And he still cites the declaration as the foundation for his policies. But the key, the secret behind everything is he knows, he by God knows that mainstream media, the television networks, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times will not challenge him on the basis of what he said today and what he has done for the past 7 years. They will not challenge him. Although criticize his policies, some of the editorial pages were sure. But they will not challenge him word for word, line for line. And show where George W. Bush is an absolute hypocrite and liar. And the person who wrote the speech, what a cynical bastard, huh? What a cynic. As Robert Perry said today, Bush has never backed away from his assertion that he can designate anyone he wants as an enemy combatant and have that person either executed on sight or locked up without charges indefinitely. And this evil snake talks about human rights? Nor has he recanted on his claimed authority to subject detainees to torture. And this snake bastard talks about human rights in front of the world? Of course he does. Because you see, he's trying to soften his image here at home. And he knows that you and I are too stupid. Or not stupid, we're ignorant. We don't know what the hell the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is about. Hell, most of us don't know what our own Declaration of Human Rights is about. We still hang nooses in trees in front of a high school, for Christ's sake. What do we know about human rights? So Bush and his speechwriters know. And Bush knows nothing. He reads what they hand him. What did I hear tonight on Oberman's program? That they had to use phonetic pronunciation of certain words, and a copy got out on the internet. Okay, so everybody does that. But these were words like United Nations. Perry writes, contradicting the classic definition of inalienable rights, that is, the inherent right of everyone to possess certain fundamental protections under the law, Bush has flipped the concept, asserting his unilateral right to do whatever he wants to people he judges to be threats to innocent Americans or U.S. allies. Bush said today, quote, when innocent people are trapped in a life of murder and fear, the declaration is not being upheld, end quote. Really? No kidding. It's incredible. Upside down world. Up is down. Left is right. It's madness. It's the Red Queen. Well, what to expect from this freak, right? All right, stick around. We'll be back after the break. I want to talk a little bit about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Cowboy song. He does too much. He said I knocked that Western accent with a Dixie touch. He was a riff on a logo way. He's what you call the swinging half breed, singing his cowgirl. I wish I knew the law that I could sign that would make people love one another.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Ahmadinejad, what a piece of work this guy is, huh? Incredible. New York Times today says there are many reasons they use the royal we, or the editorial we, find Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's policies and pronouncements loathsome. And then the Times says, high on that list are his denial of the Holocaust. And I think what Ahmadinejad has said, and this is the same as denying it. I mean, where it concerns this, he's just a total ass. He really is. But he said, you know, it should be treated as he talks about the Holocaust the way Christian conservatives talk about the fact of evolution. Same way. And then the Times says, high on that list are his denial of the Holocaust, his call to wipe Israel off the map. Now, as much of a jackass as this guy is, he never said that, ever. And I'm going to prove it to you in a minute. And his country's sponsorship of terrorism, the Times says. Equally loathsome is Iran's denial of basic civil rights to its citizens, including the right of free speech. And then the Times goes on to say, so we are dismayed by the behavior of some of New York's democratically elected representatives who denounced and threatened Columbia University for inviting the Iranian leader to speak there yesterday. We can imagine no better way to give hope to opponents of Iran's repressive state than by showcasing America's democracy and commitment to free speech. And then it went on to comment on Lee Bollinger, who the Columbia's president, the university's president, was on one side of the stage, and Ahmadinejad was on the other, and ostensibly Lee Bollinger was introducing him. And he freely told Mr. Ahmadinejad, quote, you exhibit all the signs of a petty and cruel dictator, end quote. And then Mahmoud said he would not be, quote, affected by this unfriendly treatment, end quote. He also made some just half-assed statements. We don't have homosexuals like in your country. Okay. And then the Times says, unlike Iran's citizens, Americans have the right to laugh at leaders as well as protest Mr. Ahmadinejad's visit and Colombia's decision to schedule his speech. The threats of possible sanctions against Columbia University were an insult to that freedom. In an interview with the New York Times, the Speaker of New York's Assembly, Sheldon Silver, warned that legislators might now, quote, take a different view, end quote, of capital support provided to Columbia. Yeah, that is a nasty-ass threat, and Sheldon Silver should be taken behind the woodshed and spanked. Turn him over to Larry Craig. Larry Craig will take his pants down and spank him. Blister his little butt for making such a nasty statement as that. But this is America. Bush is America. So, now, as far as the human rights thing, and Ahmadinejad this and Ahmadinejad that, let me digress for just a second. In Egypt, who is the third largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid? Israel's first, I believe. Iraq has now become second, and Egypt is third, although the Iraq foreign aid just goes right back into the pockets of corrupt, filthy U.S. contractors and not U.S. contractors. I mean, there are Russians over there, Israelis, Iranians, Germans. There are all sorts of thieves, liars, and bandits operating in Iraq. But Egypt has dissolved the Association for Human Rights Legal Aid, based on what the Egyptian government says is that organization's breach of the law that prohibits non-government organizations from receiving funding from abroad without the prior authorization of the Ministry of Social Solidarity. Now, that's nonsense. All of that I just said is nonsense. Because whatever is going to this human rights organization, Egypt has known about. The only reason Egypt is getting over $2 billion a year in direct aid from the United States is because they played nice and made peace with Israel all those years ago, signed a treaty all those years ago. Part of the deal was that Egypt, after the Camp David Accords in 1979, during Carter's administration, part of the deal that was as a reward for Egypt, the recognition of Israel, we would provide them $2 billion a year in economic and military assistance. Now, that's been going on for, how long ago is that? 79. What is that, 25 years? No, 26, 27. How many years? 28 years. So $2 billion a year, $56 billion has gone to our good friends, the Egyptians, who operate their country as a dictatorship. There's no freedom of speech there either. Oh, there's an attempt at it. How many members of the Muslim Brotherhood who speak out against Mubarak are in prison or have been executed or disappeared? And Egypt is where we send people along with Syria and some of these other half-assed countries to torture the people we want tortured. So, the statements about Ahmadinejad. Yeah, he's a jerk. How about Bush is a jerk? Cheney's a jerk. Blair was a jerk. How many world leaders, so called, or heads of state are not jerks? How about this guy Abe, who just had his ass handed to him in Japan? How soon before he'll commit suicide for what he's done to that country? It never ever stops. Okay, yawn. But the statement that is attributed, and I've got to get this out. If it offends you, then I don't know what to tell you. Turning Ahmadinejad into public enemy number one, into the greatest threat to world peace since Adolf Hitler, is such an old trick. Oh my God! What's his name? The Panamanian dictator was the greatest. Noriega, the greatest threat since Hitler. Saddam was the greatest threat since Hitler. Ho Chi Minh was the greatest threat since Hitler. They're all the greatest threats since Hitler. Now it's Mahmoud's turn. Juan Cole, writing at Salon, points out that media have focused on debating whether he should be allowed to speak at Columbia, on whether his request to visit Ground Zero should have been honored. That request was rejected. Instead, the U.S. State Department denounced Ahmadinejad as being little more than a terrorist himself. Critics have also cited his statements about the Holocaust or his hopes that the Israeli state will collapse. He has been depicted as a Hitler figure intent on killing Israeli Jews, even though he is not commander-in-chief of the Iranian armed forces, has never invaded any other country, denies he's an anti-Semite, has never called for any Israeli civilians to be killed, and allows Iran's 20,000 Jews to have representation in the Iranian parliament. The neoconservatives in this country are even claiming that the U.S. has been at war with Iran since 1979, when they seized our embassy. This is absurd. In the 80s, the Reagan administration sold substantial numbers of arms to Iran. And some of those beating the war drums most loudly now, like think tank rat Michael Ledeen, were middlemen in the Reagan administration's unconstitutional weapons sales to Tehran. The sales would have been a form of treason if, in fact, the U.S. had been at war with Iran at the time. So Ledeen and these other neocon rats are apparently accusing themselves of treason. And it goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. What did Ahmadinejad say? Well, I got an email from Andre. He said, Mike, did you happen to watch 60 Minutes last night when the Iranian president was on with an interview? Did you see how tough the reporter questioning him was? Answer me simply yes or no, blah, blah, blah. Raising his voice from time to time, wow, I thought if only this journalist or the media in general would ever be as tough questioning Bush as they questioned Ahmadinejad, then maybe, just maybe, we would not have this crazy war in Iraq. Andre writes, I was totally disgusted with that journalist, do not remember his name, well, it was Scott Pelley, stating Bush administration talking points like implying that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, yada, 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 yada. So, you know, it doesn't, if you truly are interested in the truth and aren't afraid of what you find, and it can be scary when you say, wait a second, this guy never said Israel should be wiped off the map. He didn't say that. And if you start checking it out to verify your suspicion that he never said it, and then you find out, if you speak Farsi, that in fact he didn't, all of a sudden that's a little bit too high. That's difficult to deal with. But across the world, this rumor has spread. And it could have catastrophic implications. Iran's president has threatened to destroy Israel, or to quote the misquote, quote, Israel must be wiped off the map, end quote. That statement was never made. And I'll show you what was really said when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy, this is Nova M. We'll be right back.
it's in the Gulf Coast countries' interests that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Jesus. The statement, Israel must be wiped off the map, was never made. On Tuesday, October 25th, 2005, at the Ministry of Interior Conference Hall in Tehran, newly elected Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad delivered a speech at a program reportedly attended by thousands titled, "The World Without Zionism." Large posters surrounding him displayed this title prominently in English, obviously for the benefit of the international press. Below the poster's title was a slick graphic depicting an hourglass containing planet Earth at its top. Two small round orbs representing the United States and Israel are shown falling through the hourglass's narrow neck and crashing to the bottom. Now, it's important to note that the quote that could have catastrophic implications because it's being used to whip everybody into a frenzy. The quote in question was itself a quote. They are the words of the late Ayatollah Khomeini, the father of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Now, although he quoted Khomeini to affirm his own position on Zionism, the actual words belong to Khomeini and not Ahmadinejad. Thus, Ahmadinejad has essentially been credited or blamed for a quote that is not only unoriginal, but represents a viewpoint already in place well before he ever took office. So what did Ahmadinejad actually say? I'm going to try this, to quote his exact words in Farsi. Iman goft in rejem-i ish galgar-i gadzbeyad az safeye ruzgarmav shavad. That passage means nothing to most of us. We don't speak Farsi. But one word might ring a bell. Regime, eh? It is the word regime, pronounced just like the English word with an extra eh sound at the end. Ahmadinejad did not refer to Israel the country or Israel the landmass, but the Israeli regime. This is a vastly significant distinction, as one cannot wipe a regime off the map. Ahmadinejad does not even refer to Israel by name. He instead uses the specific phrase, regime-e ishgalgar-e gods, meaning the regime occupying Jerusalem. So this raises the question, what exactly did he want wiped from the map? The answer, nothing. That's because the word map was never used. The full quote translated directly to English, quote, "The imam said this regime occupying Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time," end quote. And then Aresh Naruzi, who wrote this, I'm quoting from, broke it down word for word from Farsi to English. In his speech, Ahmadinejad declares that Zionism is the West's apparatus of political oppression against Muslims. He says the Zionist regime, his words, was imposed on the Islamic world as a strategic bridgehead to ensure domination of the region and its assets. Palestine, Ahmadinejad insists, is the front line of the Islamic world's struggle with American hegemony, and its fate will have repercussions for the entire Middle East. Do you see anything wrong with that? I mean, do you see anything factually incorrect? Ahmadinejad acknowledges that the removal of America's powerful grip on the region via the Zionists may seem unimaginable to some, but reminds the audience that, as Khomeini predicted, other seemingly invincible empires have disappeared and now only exist in history books. He then proceeds to list three that have collapsed, crumbled, or vanished, all within the last 30 years. The Shah of Iran, the U.S.-installed monarch, the Soviet Union, and Iran's former enemy, Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. Now, in the first and third examples, the Shah and Saddam, Ahmadinejad prefaces their mention with Khomeini's own words foretelling that individual regime's demise. He concludes by referring to Khomeini's unfulfilled wish, which is, quote, "The imam said this regime occupying Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time. This statement is very wise," end quote. Now, that's the passage that has been isolated, twisted, and distorted so famously. By measure of comparison, Ahmadinejad would seem to be calling for regime change, not war. Mirazi then writes, one may wonder, where did this false interpretation originate? Who is responsible for the translation that has sparked such worldwide controversy? The answer is surprising. The inflammatory wiped off the map, quote, was first disseminated not by Iran's enemies, but by Iran itself. The Islamic Republic News Agency, IRNA, Iran's official propaganda arm, used that phrasing in the English version of some of their news releases covering the World Without Zionism conference. International media, including the BBC, Al Jazeera, Time Magazine, and countless others, picked up on the Islamic Republic News Agency's quote and made headlines out of it without verifying its accuracy, and rarely referring to the source. Iran's foreign minister soon attempted to clarify the statement, but the quote had a life of its own. Though the Islamic Republic News Agency's wording was inaccurate and misleading, the media assumed it was true, and besides, it made great copy. Now, following news of that remark, Ahmadinejad's remark, British Prime Minister Tony Blair expressed a revulsion, his word, and implied it might be necessary now to attack Iran. UN Chief Kofi Annan canceled his scheduled trip to Iran due to the controversy. Ariel Sharon demanded that Iran be expelled from the UN for calling for Israel's destruction. Shimon Peres threatened to wipe Iran off the map. Benjamin Netanyahu, who has warned that Iran is preparing another Holocaust for the Jewish state, is calling for Ahmadinejad to be tried for war crimes, for inciting genocide. And there's more, and I hope you stick around and hear it. And like I say, when you're going after the truth, sometimes you find out stuff that doesn't really feel all that comfortable. Eh? Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I am attempting here just to get across what it was that Ahmadinejad said back in 2005. The quote that most of us are familiar with is that Israel must be wiped off the face or wiped off the map. That quote has been modified a couple of times, wiped off the earth, destroyed, yada yada. It's Mark Twain said, what did he say, that a lie can get around the earth 5 times before the truth has time to get up in the morning, put its shoes on. I know I'm garbling that all to hell, but I don't know what Ahmadinejad's motives are for anything that he does. I'm not that astute an observer, but I do know the motivations of the Bush crime family. It is an end to democracy in this country. It is the establishment of a privileged class whose rights and privileges can never be challenged. I also understand that the Bush crime family is anti-democratic. It is everything that is antithetical to what the framers of this Constitution, this country, had in mind when they put the damn thing together. Therefore, just about anything that comes out of the mouth of George Bush or any of his posse, any of them, I don't care if they're with AIPAC, I don't care if they're with the Project for New American Century and his own cabinet, I make the assumption, based on everything that I've observed from this outfit, that it is a lie. It is misconstrued. It is something that is designed to forward their own ends, which is American empire, the absolute control of as much of the world's oil as they can get their hands on, even to the extent of invading other countries to get it, sending Americans to their deaths, sending innocent civilians by the hundreds of thousands to their deaths. Damn it, what do you call that? In the meantime, we have the lie about this guy Ahmadinejad. I don't know him. I know he represents a country that is run by religious fanatics, just like Bush would like to set up in this country. I would assume Ahmadinejad is as much of a liar as any world leader. I would assume that Ahmadinejad has an agenda that he would like to see in full force. But I'm not convinced that his agenda includes the ending of the State of Israel or the destruction of the United States or Europe. All three of those ideas, of course, have been put out there now by the anti-Iranian forces who want us to engage in yet another war. Ariel Sharon, Shimon Peres, Benjamin Netanyahu, Tony Blair, George W. Bush, Kofi Annan, all of them picked up the distortion and ran with it. Obviously, for their own reasons, a means to their own ends. I don't think Ahmadinejad wants to see the ending of the State of Israel. I think he would like to see regime change, just as the United States has with several countries with whom we just simply didn't agree. Now, back to Arash Nirozi's article from antiwar.com. This artificial quote has also been subject to additional alterations. U.S. officials and media often take the liberty of dropping the map reference altogether, replacing it with the more acutely threatening phrase, wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Newspaper and magazine articles dutifully report Ahmadinejad has, quote, called for the destruction of Israel, end quote, as do senior officials in the United States government. Ahmadinejad, regardless of what else he may or may not be, has never called for the destruction of the State of Israel. Can you handle that fact? Can you handle that? You know, I wondered if I could when I started investigating the quote. Can I handle that? Can I accept the fact that this guy did not say he wanted to see Israel wiped off the map? Because accepting, for me to accept that he did say, wipe Israel off the map, sounds so typical of what you have heard, what I have heard, from despotic leaders in the Middle East. So it just fit the pattern, didn't it? Confusing matters even further, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad pontificates rather than giving direct answers when questioned about the statement. Washington Post interview, September 2006. Question, are you really serious when you say that Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth? Answer, we need to look at the scene in the Middle East. 60 years of war, 60 years of displacement, 60 years of conflict, not even a day of peace. Look at the war in Lebanon, the war in Gaza. What are the reasons for these conditions? We need to address and resolve the root problem. Question, your suggestion is to wipe Israel off the face of the earth? Answer, our suggestion is very clear. Let the Palestinian people decide their fate in a free and fair referendum, and the result, whatever it is, should be accepted. The people with no roots there are now ruling the land. Question. You've been quoted as saying that Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. Is that your belief? Answer. What I have said has made my position clear. If we look at a map of the Middle East from 70 years ago, question. So the answer is yes. You do believe that it should be wiped off the face of the earth. Answer. Are you asking me yes or no? Is this a test? Do you respect the right to self-determination for the Palestinian nation? Yes or no? Is Palestine as a nation considered a nation with the right to live under humane conditions or not? Yes or no? Let's allow those rights to be enforced for those 5 million displaced people. Now that exchange is typical of Ahmadinejad's interviews with the American media. Even if every media outlet in the world were to retract the mistranslated quote attributed to Ahmadinejad tomorrow, the major damage has already been done, providing the groundwork for the next phase of disinformation, complete character demonization, Ahmadinejad, we are told, is the next Hitler, a grave threat to world peace, who wants to bring about a new Holocaust. According to some detractors, he not only wants to destroy Israel, but after that, he will nuke America, and then Europe! An October 2006 memo titled Words of Hate, Iran's Escalating Threats, released by AIPAC, opens with this warning, quote, Ahmadinejad and other top Iranian leaders are issuing increasingly belligerent statements threatening to destroy the United States, Europe, and Israel, end quote. These claims not only fabricate an unsubstantiated threat, but assume far more power than he actually possesses. I would hope to shout. Now, you can, if you want to get a copy of this yourself, go to antiwar.com. Or just do a Google. You can find it by Googling, quote, wiped off the map, end quote, the rumor of the century. Take you right to it. Iran. Is this not true? Iran has been the country that the United States has tried to destroy. We tried it in 1953 by overthrowing their duly elected government. Because their president had decided to nationalize the, at that time, nascent oil companies, the oil industry that was starting to develop in Iran, owned by British and American oil concerns. So the Iranians held an election. They elected a man to be their leader, and the U.S. went in and overthrew him and installed the Shah, who stayed there until 1979, till the next revolution, when the religious fanatic Khomeini came home from France, and the Shah came to the United States to die of cancer. In the 80s, we supported Saddam Hussein in his war against Iranians. We provided intelligence. We provided material support to Saddam in his war against Iranians. The Iranians have always, in modern history, been kind of a bulwark against their Muslim brothers, the Arabs. They don't like religious fundamentalism, but when your country is run by a tyrant, installed and backed by the United States for 35 years, what are you going to do? Eventually, you're going to rise up and overthrow. Iran has been the target of an unrelenting campaign of verbal and written terror for the past how many years? 5 years? 6 years? It just won't stop. And of all nations, the United States and Great Britain telling the Iranians that they will not be allowed to develop nuclear power? Wouldn't it be nice if we could put the nuclear bomb genie back in the bottle? But we made a decision back in 1945 to release that demon. It's astonishing. You know, there may be 20 reasons to invade Iran. But one of them is not that Ahmadinejad said Israel should be wiped off the map, simply because he never said it.
My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq.
Here comes revolution.
This comes from RegTVNewsLies.org, the speech at Columbia. Reg writes, this was such a win for Ahmadinejad, it could not have been more of a PR coup for him had he written the speech by the president of Columbia University himself. Knowing that the meeting would be broadcast around the world, Ahmadinejad also knew beforehand that he would be dealt with rudely. This was announced beforehand so as not to offend potential donors to the university, and of course the right wing of the American Jewish Warhawk community. In Muslim culture, when you invite someone into your home, you're obliged to treat that person with respect, no matter what the animosity. You can kill him outside your home if he deserves it, but within the boundaries of your home, you must be respectful. Ahmadinejad was invited to speak before a group of students at a university, not a trough. He agreed to take questions from the students and to answer them without censoring or limiting their scope. That was the opportunity for students or international politics of international politics to have a rare opportunity to both express themselves and to represent their school and their nation with dignity. The man, Ahmadinejad, no matter how bombastic or foolish, is the elected president of his nation and came to the building as a guest speaker, not a target for disrespect and personal attack. The Muslim world now sees how Americans feel free to insult guests whom they invite as guests into their homes. The introductory speech by the president of Colombia was a capitulation to pressure from political and religious groups with their own personal agendas and control over contributions. It was an utter disgrace. Such insults are felt very deeply by so many millions we have already alienated. It will not easily be forgotten, and did little more than to reinforce anti-American sentiment throughout the Muslim world that already views the U.S. as an oppressor and invader. The media had a field day. Americans have a new devil. AIPAC, PNAC, and Dick Cheney are the true fools, but in the long run, we will all suffer on the road to another war. It just happens over and over and over and over again, doesn't it? Huh? Remember the rumors? And as a matter of fact, when I first saw the story, what was it, Kathy, 3-4 years ago, I went on the air with the story until somebody immediately called in and said, no, that came from that Canadian newspaper that is very anti-Muslim, very pro-Israel, and very much liars. But it was the story that said Ahmadinejad had issued a decree saying that all the Jews in Iran had to wear Yellow Stars of David. Remember that? And if it wasn't Yellow Stars of David, I guess it was some sort of a identifying marker on the outside of their clothing. What? Yeah, and the story was absolutely not true. But as Mark Twain said, that story made it around the earth 20 times before the truth could even get up in the morning and have breakfast. And even I got sucked into it. I don't deny a knee-jerk reaction that I constantly struggle against where it concerns so much that's reported out of the Middle East as truth. And I'm talking about whether it comes from the Israeli press or the Arab press or, in this case, the Iranian press, or wherever it comes from. Because practically everything in the Middle East is illusion. It's mirage. What is the truth in the Middle East? Who knows? All the efforts to try to find some sort of conciliation between these factors, whether they are Persian or Arabic or Israeli or Jewish or Muslim, whatever they are, these desperate attempts like, hey, please, can't you work? Can't there be some agreement? Is this where the global Holocaust, small h, has to begin? Unbelievable. What would it have been like if Ahmadinejad would have been offered? Remember, it was the Iranians who took to the streets in Tehran on September 11th. And were expressing just heartfelt sympathy for what had happened in this country. Declarations of support from the government of Iran. That seems like a different lifetime, doesn't it? But what would have happened had this guy been treated with respect? Not fawning condescension, but just respect. Just come on in, state your case, and answer the damn questions.
Did you pretend it didn't matter? Did you blame a few bad men? Did you think your leaders wouldn't just do it all again?
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Staying with this Ahmadinejad topic just a little bit longer. I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the program. His comment about gay folk. You know, just the offhand comment, we don't have homosexuals in Iran, is insane in its ludicrosity. Is that a word? Ludicrousness. Absolutely insane. And I understand that reports from Iran or from the human rights organizations is that in Iran, homosexuality is a crime punishable by death. And that stems, I believe, from the religious fanaticism that is at the heart of that country, just like the religious fanaticism that is at the heart of the Republican Party in the United States. The Christian Reconstruction Movement would feel right at home in Iran where it concerns Iran, where it concerns gay people, because the Christian Reconstruction Movement that is active and alive and trying to seep its way into everything American would condemn gays to immediate execution. So it is, you know, I'm not here tonight to be an apologist for Mahmoud Ahmadinejad or how the Ayatollahs run that country. Ahmadinejad was elected. But the position of president in Iran is not one of power. It's one of rhetoric. It's a figurehead position. The Ayatollahs are the ones who run Iran. And they are starting to tighten down on the freedom that the Iranian people thought was beginning to take hold in their country. Not so. But someone please tell me the difference between what the Iranians have to deal with because of religious fanaticism in their country and what the religious Christian fanatics in this country would bring about given the opportunity. Are gays being hanged in this country? No. They're being beaten to death and left to hang on fences. Ah, but Mike, that's not the government doing that. No, it is not the government doing that. Tell that to the dead person. The attitudes put out there against gay people in this country are no different from the attitudes put out there against gay people in Iran. The only difference is, in Iran, you can be executed for being homosexual. If the religious, Christian religious fundamental fanatics were ever to gain power in this country, the same would be true. As far as his other claims, his trying to minimize the Holocaust, he has said 60 million people died in World War II. Why are 6 million always singled out? Somebody should explain, or at least that's the translation from Farsi to English that we see. If he said that, someone should sit him down and explain the difference between the horror of war, the absolute slaughter that goes on in battlefields and cities that are burned to a crisp in the insanity of war on the one hand, and on the other, the systematic execution and burning of 6 million people because of their religious beliefs. Someone should explain that to him, although he might already understand that. And as far as his hedging about the Holocaust, the most documented atrocity in the history of the human race is the Holocaust. If Ahmadinejad wants to be that much of a history denier or an ignorant man or whatever it is, whatever his agenda is, what is it that we can do to convince him otherwise? Take him to any one of dozens of Holocaust museums around the globe and let him see the pictures himself? What would he do if he saw the pictures? Oh, well, that's typhoid. But we do know that there are 20,000 Jews, I believe. I don't know. Maybe it's not 20,000. Maybe, again, it's a translation. Maybe it was 2,000. Maybe it's 10. Maybe it's none. I don't know. And we do understand there's at least one member of the Iranian parliament who is Jewish, don't we? Or is that a mistranslation too? I don't know anymore. I really don't. But what I do know, because I trust what I read, the breakdown of the sentence in Farsi and where it came from, a religious fanatic, Ayatollah Khomeini, who is now dead, that the regime in Israel should be changed or removed, that is not the same as this guy saying Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth or wiped off the map. That's all. That was the point. And like I say, if that is too hard for people to understand that truth, and I defy anyone to present any kind of a counter argument. You want to email me and present a counter argument about what was really said? Go ahead. But it's difficult when you are pursuing the truth in a world that is awash in nothing. We're neck deep in lies and deceptions and murder and mayhem and treachery. Neck deep in it. If you go scooting around looking for the truth of some little incident, you may find something that you just don't feel comfortable with. Okay. Let's do some phone calls here. Let's start with Mike, who is in Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. I wanted to thank you for bringing attention to the Human Rights Declaration.
The one that Bush made mincemeat out of today at the
yes.
UN. oh my God.
I've been a union organizer for years in a couple of different industries and found that a group of workers have no labor rights and work under 19th century labor law in the United States. And I've been using Article 23 to push for their rights and recognitions to join and form unions.
That's a good idea. But the Declaration of Human Rights by the UN, is that just a declaration, or did the U.S. vote in favor of it? Usually those things U.S. governments stay away from because it can come back to bite whatever government is in charge in this country right on the ass.
Well, what I've been doing is pushing it as more of a human rights issue than a labor issue.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, does the United States subscribe to or support the UN Declaration of Human Rights?
I think so. It was written in 1948 in San Francisco, and I remember I saw some documents where they had signed on to the declaration, and. When the National Labor Relations Act says that musicians and entertainers are exempt from unionization, then we pull this up and we've used it on campaigns and boycotts and things, and with some success. But they try to call the musicians and entertainers independent contractors, and that exempts them from labor rights under the National Labor Relations Act. And what I do is I refer to Article 23 and says the term everyone refers to every man, woman, and child on the planet.
That's true. Yeah.
And it's kind of strange because the ancient musicians union that represents these guys is dominated by 40-50% of employers are on their elected boards around the country of musicians. And there's a joke in the Blues Brothers movie about the good old boys, where they're outside Bob's Country Bunker, and John Belushi actually made a reference to it. And you've got a union that's dominated by employers for the last 40 years, and there's no labor laws being pushed forward for the musicians. It's been real help because they're working under 19th century labor law and they can't even get minimum wage protections in the nightclub industry.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Any injustice in this country, whether it involves labor rights or minority rights, so-called, or women's rights to privacy or whatever, any of those rights that can be addressed through the UN Declaration, I think is a good idea. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. Len is calling from New York, listening on the Internet. Len, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's me, the Orthodox Jewish guy in New York.
Oh, hey, Len. How you doing?
Good. You know, I hear what you're saying. I didn't go look up everything, but trying to justify what Ahmadinejad said is trying to justify what Bush said. I mean, you know, it...
No, wait. No, I'm not trying to justify anything. What I'm trying to do is to show how it was misquoted and mistranslated. It's not for me to justify someone else's statements. Hold on, Len. I got to do a break, and then we'll come back. But justification is not what I'm about. You know, I thought I made that clear before I got into the Ahmadinejad thing. What I'm about is trying to find the truth just for me. If you want to come along for the ride, come along. But in order for me to make a decision about people like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, I've got to know if something that he is charged with saying is actually true, because that's going to influence my opinion of him.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're talking with Len, who is called in from New York City. All right, Len, go ahead.
Well, you know, when he or all the other leaders, quote unquote, of Islamic states over the many years have used the word Zionist regime, it's not like they're talking about the, the Republican Party. They're talking about, you know, any government controlled by Jews. So to the extent that it's like you and I might have said in a million different ways that we'd love to see Bush and Cheney hauled in front of the International Court of The Hague, and given their proper justice, you know, is another way of saying they deserve to be hung. So, you know, however he might want to spell it out, without exactly saying it, what they're really calling for is an end to any type of Jewish, management of the area where Palestinians live or lived, at any point in the past. But, my daughter went to a rally against him yesterday, and I told her that if you were going to carry a sign to, to make a case, a statement, it would be after Ahmadinejad and Bush, then what? Because really all we're talking about here is for the last 60 years, both sides of every fight, just being belligerent, here we have Eisenhower, the guy who warned us about the military-industrial complex, really setting in motion, all of these overthrowing of states, and the business of, so that's the left hand, and the right hand is, arms sales over the last 30 years to everybody and anybody. It's a preposterous, deadly spiral, and we're as responsible as anybody about it. But there are evil people.
Oh, I don't disagree. As far as Zionism, that is a it is a philosophy. As a matter of fact, the term, if I remember, was first coined by a Jewish publisher before the turn of the last century. This is not a term of derision. Zionism was a specific political slash religious slash philosophical point of view.
It really wasn't religious when it was initiated.
Well, it did if you can agree that it connected Jews to the land God gave them in their theology. What do you call that if not religious?
Yes, that's very true.
So I can understand
that it's the Jewish religion, but to the extent that it was a secular movement, it meant a homeland for Jewish people because
right.
They never had a homeland, any place they can call home.
Right. Well, I don't disagree with any of that. But
they don't want that to be a Jew. I mean, their position, when I say they, all of these guys who've been arguing, for eliminating Jews, is that if they want to live there, under Palestinian rule, that's fine. Let them stay. But they can't have control of this area. They have no entitlement to it.
Well, but the people who have lived there since the original diaspora have no entitlement or control either, even though they thought they did for hundreds of years. What is wrong with having a country called Israel within which Christians, Jews, and Muslims live in as close to a democratic ideal as they possibly can? Now, number one, it would no longer be a Jewish state, as Israel is now. Israel is a Jewish state. While there are members of the Israeli Knesset who are not Jews, there are Muslims, there are Christians. I think there are Christians, I know there are Muslims. The rights that pertain to Jewish people do not pertain to non-Jews where it concerns the state of Israel. So how can that country call itself a democracy
Well, that's not true exactly that they don't have the same rights. It's a question of, if you're Jewish, you have an automatic right of citizenship, but not being Jewish doesn't, being Christian doesn't give you any second-class rights.
Well, but if you're a Muslim, if you're an Arab, if you're a Palestinian, let's not beat around the bush here. If you are a Palestinian living in the occupied territories right now, Jimmy Carter has it right. You are living under a system of apartheid.
That's right. And if you hang around any of the people in my neighborhood, they don't want to read his book. They don't hear that he's talking about the occupied territories. They just hear that he's talking about Israel, from the Mediterranean, the entire state. So nobody wants to get it right.
And Carter is the only American president who ever brokered a peace agreement between Muslims and Jews in that part of the world. He's the only one who ever did, between the Egyptians and the Israelis. And he is being demonized because what he sees is what he sees. And you're obviously you're an honest man, and so am I. If we were to have a screen in front of us right now with live action of the Palestinian territories, you and I do not have to sit here and debate that the Palestinians are treated like what they consider to be their country, in what they consider to be their country, like second-class citizens.
Right. My favorite quote that I, of my own, is, if Yasser Arafat had term limits and Bill Clinton hadn't, then this world would look very different today.
Yeah, well, that's probably true. All right, Len, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. It's always good to hear from you. I hope you stay in touch. Who was it that wrote They Must Go? I've quoted him a million times. Rabbi Meir Kahane. And I've also quoted him where he showed very clearly the attitude of the Palestinian people when he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, what do you expect them to feel when people come from Kiev and Brooklyn and Budapest and come into their country and say, no, this is ours? What do you expect them to do? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. I got an email here from Bob who writes, what am I missing? We had the president of Iran here, and we don't take him and lock him up? I don't understand. We dug Saddam out of a hole and hanged him for weapons of mass destruction that were non-existent. We believed a first-class liar, a no-name, Bush. And here we are blaming Iran for killing our guys and furnishing the enemy, and in fact, have weapons of mass destruction, and we do nothing about it. What in the hell am I missing? We have the main man on a platter, and we all pass him by. For God's sake, can someone explain? I hope you don't bypass this message from a 20-year combat vet of Korea and Vietnam. Well, I'm not exactly sure, Bob. I'm sorry. I'm just not exactly sure what you're asking here. Or the manner in which you're asking, if you're being ironic or tongue-in-cheek. I don't think Ahmadinejad has done anything to the United States. In fact, I've often wondered why the Iranians don't send a contingent of their military police over here to arrest our leadership for overthrowing their government back in 1953. Well, that's kind of silly, I know. I guess you're just being ironic, because you're right. Here we are blaming Iran for killing our guys and furnishing the enemy. In fact, have weapons of mass destruction. I'm not trying to be cute with you, but I'm not sure what you mean by weapons of mass destruction. If we're referring to nuclear weapons or gas or biological, bacteriological weapons, who knows what Iran has? So far, according to the IAEA, they do not have nuclear weapons. We do. Just about everybody in the neighborhood around there does now. Pakistan does. India does. We do. Israel does. Just about all the European countries that lust after that oil have nuclear weapons. So I don't know. I'm not sure, Bob. I'm not trying to play stupid with you. I'm just not sure what the attitude of your email is. If you're being ironic, I can appreciate it. If these are honest questions, I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know how to answer them. And again, let me make it very clear that I'm not, making a case for Ahmadinejad. I have tried to read a little bit about him. I understand at one time he was a school teacher. He's either has or is working on a PhD in what, chemistry? I don't know. I don't know that much about him. I know he was elected by a popular vote, wasn't he? Well, is that a fair statement? And he got his support from the less well-off people in Iran. Is he like a Venezuelan Hugo Chavez? I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just always intrigued when I see someone is quoted as saying Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. Not that leaders of certain states have not said that. I'm sure they have. But I like to try to track it down and air it out and say, okay, did this one really say it? And in the age of Bush, nothing is what it appears to be. Nothing. So you couple the illusory atmosphere, attitude in the Middle East, which I guess it's always been. It's the land of mirages. It's always been an illusion. If you couple that with the psychosis of George W. Bush, I mean, what are we supposed to do? 19 people, according to the official story, came to this country and killed almost 3,000 people. And 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. What punishments have we put on Saudi Arabia? Nothing. As a matter of fact, we did exactly, subsequent to that bombing of our country, we did exactly what Osama bin Laden demanded. Get out of our holy places. Get your military out of Saudi Arabia. Bush did that. If you believe the official story, Saddam determined to attack inside the United States. He did it. And he made his demands, and he said, this is why I did it, this is why I'll do it again. Get out of our holy places. Get your military the hell out of there. So Bush did it and moved the military to Iraq. So I don't, you know, who knows what's real? If 15 Saudis are among a group of 19 that murder 3,000 people on American soil, and then we go bomb Afghanistan and invade Iraq and now threatening to attack Iran, this is madness. This is just goddamn madness. It's insanity. If we talk about, Bush talks about wanting to bring democracy to the Middle East, and yet we contribute $2 billion a year into the pocket of the dictator in Egypt, where there is no free press, people are locked up for assembling to protest this dictatorial government, and then you have Saudi Arabia, with whom we do billions upon billions. We have made them wealthy with our lust for oil. What is oil now? $80 a barrel? Jesus, God in heaven. What was it during the Clintons last years? $9? $10 a barrel? We want to bring democracy to the Middle East, he says. The lying little rat bastard. You wanted to, I've said this before. Start with Egypt. Start with the UAE. Start with the Kuwait. Start with Saudi Arabia. Go to Jordan. It's all a lie. All of it is a lie. Everything involving the Middle East going back to the breakup of the Ottoman Empire is a lie. There's no such country as Iraq. There's no such country as Iran. There's no such country as Israel. There's no such country as Jordan. There used to be something called Syria, but not with the outlines it has now. It's all a lie. And it's all about oil. And it's all about that global great game. Who's going to have the assets? Who's going to build the big military? Who's going to control the oil? Who's going to control the oil? And we're all supposed to participate in this lie. And we're supposed to do it willingly. If we're Israelis or Iranians or Americans or Saudis, we're all supposed to participate in the lie from our own perspective. Oh, hell yes. Let's all participate in the lie. And then we bring God into it. You know, God ordered this. No, he didn't. He ordered this. Well, I'll kill you, you son of a bitch. Okay, kill me. I'll take your oil. It's madness. Every bit of it is madness. It's all illusion. But we're supposed to send our people to go die for the illusion and the oil and the blood and the money and the graft and the corruption. And, oh, Jesus, I mean, don't you ever just get so sick of it? And then if you challenge it, oh, well, you're being unpatriotic. Or worse, oh, you're an anti-Semite. Or maybe even worse, oh, you support terrorism! The whole debate, the language, the boundaries, everything's been corrupted. Everything has been annihilated. Try to have a discussion about any aspect of this topic. Whether a quote from Ahmadinejad or the way the Israeli government treats the Palestinians or the obscenity that occurs 24/7 in Saudi Arabia or the sweatshop forced labor camps that now exist in Jordan. Talk about any of it and see how long before somebody accuses you of either being anti-American, pro-terrorist, anti-Israeli. It's madness. Bang, bang. I love the way.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Twenty-one past the hour. Excuse me. Back to your phone calls. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
All right. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, I'm doing. Before I get started on Ahmadinejad jacket, I first like to ask, or at least say, if Stephanie Miller is Mama, can you be Papa?
No.
Aw.
No, I don't think so.
Also, I bring bad news to anybody who doesn't support Hillary, and if there are people who are listening who do support Hillary, I'm sorry, I don't. She has jumped up in the poll. She's now, I guess, the most popular Democrat, according to the polls. And my memo to Al Gore, for Christ's sakes, run.
Well, if he doesn't, Hillary will be the next president of the United States. I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, that's, she's a Democrat. But anyway, about Ahmadinejad jacket, whatever. I had the great misfortune of actually listening to him and then listening to Chuckle Nuts. And, you know, to me it's just striking. I mean, really we have such two different theocracies, same kind of crazy. And, you know, the whole, whenever I saw on CNN headlines, Ahmadinejad questions 9/11 / Holocaust, I thought, oh, God damn it. Because you know the second that starts getting into the mainstream media, that train is never late. You're going to have some conservative punk pundit go on and say, questioning the 9/11 star. They question the Holocaust, too. And you're going to have some of these pundits on Fox News going, you question 9/11. So what do you think of the Holocaust?
Right.
And I'm almost speechless now because that train is never late, Mike. And it was kind of like when you were at the thing, the talk radio forum, and then Ed Schultz, whom I'm not too fond of either, asked you what you thought of the Jewish people. Well, see, that's what's going to start happening now, I think.
Well, sure. There's always that possibility. That's why I say if you're going to really, if you have any interest in the truth at all, if one has any interest in the truth at all, one finds out things that are not necessarily comfortable. As far as Ahmadinejad is concerned, I truly believe we had a series of perfect opportunities to open dialogue with Iran. We overthrew their government. They seized our diplomats as hostages. Okay, tit for tat. Scores 1-1. Now, can we get past that nonsense, even though those two events occurred 25 years apart? We saddled them with a dictator, okay, and set up their secret police, that the end result of which was the torture and murder of lots and lots and lots of Iranian citizens. Okay. They, in turn, what did they do to us? They unleashed Ayatollah Khomeini on the West. Okay, 2-for-2. Now, can we stop this and make some sense? You know, our natural ally in the Middle East, one of our natural allies, I do believe, is Iran for a number of strategic reasons.
Well, sure.
And I'm not talking about holding back the tide of communist aggression. I'm just talking about from a standpoint of global competition. Iran would seem to be a natural ally of the United States, not what the Bush crime family and going back all the way back to Reagan and Bush one and poor Jimmy Carter and Jesus and Harold or Gerald Ford, all these people. Iran has just been this booger bear because they wouldn't play right. And playing right with us means to play by our rules. You understand what I'm saying? You there, Matthew? Oh, what happened? Did we lose Matthew? I think we did. All right. Well, if Matthew calls back in, let's tell him that apparently his end went dead, not ours. You know, I hate to sound like Rodney King. You know, can't we all just get along? But we're just about at the point that the alternative is Holocaust small h. I mean, come on. Who's kidding whom here? Once again, to see George W. Bush standing in front of the United Nations, there was not a human being in that room who didn't understand the insanity of what the man was saying when he's talking about human rights and sorting out, yes, egregious violators of human rights. But if somebody would have held a mirror up for him and say, oh, yeah, you forgot one, chuckle nuts. And everybody in that hall understood that.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Armand is calling from Florida, listening on the internet. Armand, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. First, I'd like to say that I really totally disagree with your opinion of Hillary. If she gets a nomination and then going on to win, it's just not going to happen.
You don't think so? Who do you think is going to beat her?
I think they could get Charles Manson out of prison and probably beat her. She's so dirty.
But you could say that about just about every with a couple of notable exceptions. You could say that about everybody who's been president. You know,
not to the degree of her. No way, man. No way. Go out and put her name in Yahoo and put scandal beside it. And have you got a month to read? Without interruptions.
Well, what comes up?
Give me
a list. Don't tell me.
Let's see. Money laundering, CIA, drug money laundering, weapons.
Wait.
Go ahead, Armand. It's your show. I apologize.
Surely, you know where most of that comes from, don't you? I mean, as you go through the list of scandals, do you check the sources?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hold on.
What are the sources? Money laundering, drug dealing. What are the sources for those stories?
Okay. Would you have Terry Reid on? He did the book. The Bush family and the Clintons and Mina.
Armand, is that your source?
That's just one of probably 100. You want me to go get a list and call you back and name them all?
No, that stuff.
You can't sit here and look, Mike. I don't care if Murdoch is backing her up. She's so dirty. We have the internet now, and it's just not going to happen. She's ruthless. She's one of the sleaziest attorneys in Washington.
Does she practice law in Washington?
No, but she's still an attorney. Just because you don't practice, don't mean that you're not an attorney.
All right. Armand, listen, you're way out in the ozone tonight. So I'm just going to move on. I mean, come on. Jesus God, Mena, Arkansas, where That story is just insane. And you're going to cite for me somebody who... No, I'm sorry. There are a lot of reasons, I think, that are rational to oppose a Hillary Clinton nomination or presidency. Most of them that I harbor are because I'm a liberal, she's not. That's all. She is way too conservative for me and way too keyed into corporate America. But let me tell you something. Here's a newsflash for you. She's not a drug dealer. And guess what, Armand? Neither is the Queen of England. Huh? How about that? And I know that a lot of the conspiracy freaks who go after Hillary link her to this vast drug conspiracy that the Queen of England is involved in. Armand, it's not true. Cite me something other than that book. In other words, give me a credible citation. I think Armin is starting to lose touch with the planet. All right. Back to your phone calls. Dave is calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dave, welcome to the program. Hey, Dave.
Hello?
Yes, Dave. Go ahead.
Want to talk about the UAW strike.
Okay. Yeah, we never did get to that tonight.
Yeah, I saw it on your website.
I had it right here on my stack.
Yeah. Well, listen, I just want to say I'm very proud of my international UAW brothers doing this strike. I'm very proud of them. I think it's about time.
Well, it's the first strike against the auto industry since, what, 79, 76? 76.
Ford shut them down in 76.
Yeah.
Last time GM shut them down was around 1970.
You know what part of the strike is about is General Motors trying to dump their obligations for health care. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Trying to dump their obligations for health care. You would have thought, or I would have thought, I did think, over the past 30 years, at any point along the way, especially when globalization really started biting into industrial America, that the corporations in this country would have insisted on government-sponsored single-payer health care. Because the corporate, you take General Motors, for example, the health care that they provided to the UAW was some of the best in the world.
Absolutely.
But there's no way when all of a sudden General Motors isn't even a real car company. Well, no, that's Chrysler that's been bought out by an investment group.
Right.
But General Motors, that used to be the most powerful industrial giant on the planet, and the UAW, one of, if not the, most powerful unions on the planet, and they're both now locked in this dance of death. And you know what would ease it up and make it good for General Motors and make it good for the UAW workers would be if we had single-payer health care in this country.
I agree 100%.
And that's what so much of this is about. General Motors is trying to dump it back on the union, and they're saying, here, go self-insure all of your retirees. How many retirees are there? 60, 80, 90, 100,000? 300,000?
Oh, more than that. More than that.
300,000?
I think it's just under 300,000. Yeah.
And it's an impossibility. This is not going to work out. The time is right, and it would seem to me that General Motors would understand this. Nobody's going to listen in Washington to the UAW, but they might listen to General Motors and some of these other huge corporations if they would step up and say, we can't do this anymore. But, oh, well.
Well, listen, I just want to say I'm so proud of my UAW brothers.
I hear you.
Out there fighting for us.
I hear you.
And I am a union officer, by the way.
Well, I'm a member of AFTRA. So, you know,
right.
I mean, not most of us. There's 11% of us in the workforce left that are unionized.
Great.
So that's a damn shame. Dave, thanks. I appreciate your call. Thanks
All right.
a lot. Thanks for checking in. Nelson Lichtenstein, who is a professor of history at University of California at Santa Barbara, said what I just said, a major factor in the strike is health care. if GM is going to be able to relieve itself of its health care obligations. That's what this is about. Rather than pushing for a national universal system of health insurance, General Motors is trying to foist its health benefit obligations onto the union by putting together something called a health insurance trust that would be administered by the union alone. Another major issue is General Motors continuing to globalize. That is, increasingly, General Motors buys cheap parts from Mexico or Albania or East Asia. They might not build the car there, and General Motors might subcontract the work, but that drives down the cost and endangers these high-wage jobs in the U.S. And this comes in the context of the UAW having been unable to unionize Toyota and Honda plants in the U.S. So the union's fate, UAW's fate, is now linked far too closely to the dwindling set of companies like General Motors. I've always been pro-union my entire life. That's just how I was brought up. And I believe that that's how I was brought up. Once I could use a bit of logic, a bit of understanding of what predatory capitalism is all about, it became very clear to me how absolutely necessary unions really are. You can't have a labor force that is successful and can take care of itself without unions. It can't be done. Look anywhere on the planet. Look at slave labor. Look at forced labor. Look at the countries where all this junk, this crap that we Americans have been buying and aren't going to be buying very much longer. Trust me on that. Look at it. Look at the labor forces. Do you ever hear about unionized auto workers in China? No. You ever hear about unionized textile workers in Jordan? No. You ever hear about unionized, I don't know, pick something? No. And here in the United States, what are we down to now? 11% of the workforce is still unionized. When the last union organizer no longer has workers to organize, then we all become Myanmar or Burma or whatever the hell they call themselves now. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
We are all in this together. Every public employee. Times are tough for public workers. Every day it's something new. Lay off threats and hiring freezes. Freezes in our wages too. Paychecks pounded by inflation. Budgets cut down to the bone. We
Ten before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and handled your phone calls. Billy Foster, our chat room moderator. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And a partridge in a pear tree. This is from Terry writes, Dear Mike, just wanted to let you know that Larry Craig's motion to withdraw his guilty plea is happening tomorrow, Wednesday, at the Hennepin County Courthouse at the Southdale Library. I guess that's in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'd like to invite anyone who has the B-52's classic hit, Living in My Own Private Idaho, on a boombox to bring it down and we'll draw straws to see who gets tasered by security. Yeah, well, Larry Craig really isn't guilty of anything except massive hypocrisy. I hope he does withdraw it. Jeez. What did he do? How do you plead to waving your hand?
Guilty.
How do you plead to tapping your foot?
Guilty.
How do you plead to being a hypocritical son of a bitch who's gone out of your way to make life for gay folk miserable in this country?
Ah, well, it says in the Bible.
Guilty. Back to your phone calls. Gordon is calling from Oklahoma City, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, Mike. After that one call about Hillary, I was just wondering if I was on the same planet as everybody.
I know. Oh, my God. You know, you can disagree with Hillary on so many things, but, you know, that she's the queen of criminal enterprise is just, oh, God. Oh, well, that's not what
I
called.
Yeah. But that's not the reason I called. The reason I was, I have a couple things to bring up. I want to be real quick because I know we're running out of time, about the Ahmadinejad visit. And I think that it couldn't have been more timely. And I really appreciate it for one aspect because of what he said about the no homosexuals remark in Iran. And, of course, that's been all over the press and CNN and even Newt Gingrich suddenly seemed concerned about the treatment of the gay community
in
Iran. Isn't that astonishing?
Isn't that astonishing? Now, if we take a literal trend, somebody wrote to me tonight and said, look, what he said was, we don't have your problem with gays in our country or something like that. And the point was maybe... what he was saying, I don't know what the hell, I forget. I don't have the email in front of me, but it was kind of an interesting point. But I hear what you're saying. All of a sudden, all the people who would do anything to smash gay people and deprive them of basic legal as well as human rights in this country now all of a sudden have found a greater enemy than the gays, and that's Ahmadinejad. Imagine that.
Right, and what makes this so beautiful is that day after tomorrow, on Thursday, the Senate will be voting to bring up the Matthew Shepard Act.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's coming up on Thursday. So let's see what these people are made up of, or are we going to find out that they're...
Now, what is the Matthew Shepard Act? Refresh
that's
me.
That's the Anti-Hate Crimes Act, which
will include the
LGBT community and the list of all the other...
When's that vote? Thursday or tomorrow?
That's on Thursday.
On Thursday, yeah. That's going to be interesting. And especially in the context that you just put it, they're all jumping to condemn the way gays are treated in Iran. Let's see how they will legislate treatment of gay folk in this country.
Right.
But I think, Gordon, all we're going to see is just one more great big example of hypocrisy. You know, Republican hypocrisy. That's how we're going to see.
McCain is one of the main ones that's trying to block it.
Block the vote?
Yes, he's trying to block it. the guy that, and he's not going to gain one vote from the religious right. They've already written him off. His campaign for president is already dead. It's the rotting corpse is smelling up the country. And
oh, it is. I almost feel sorry for him. I really don't feel sorry for him, but I almost do. Feel sorry for McCain. Because he really had the long knife stuck between his ribs by George Bush back in 2000. Had they not done him in South Carolina the way they did him, McCain would have probably gone on to be the Republican nominee for president. Now, he would have been defeated by Al Gore. I don't think there were, just like Bush was defeated, and I don't think there were operatives in the McCain camp who knew how to steal votes the way operatives in the Bush camp did.
I agree. I don't think they were as treacherous as the Bush camp.
No,
but
just
somewhere in the past few years after that presidency slipped out of his fingers, I think McCain just snapped.
He did. I think he did. Hey, thanks for checking in, Gordon.
Yeah, we'll see you on the cruise.
All right, and thanks for the thanks for all the emails you sent me. I appreciate them.
Okay, bye.
All right, pal. Take it easy. We're out of time, right? Just about. Oh, did Gordon say see you on the cruise? Is he going on the cruise? Yeah, that's next. That's a Saturday week, a Friday week. We're taking off next Friday, not this coming Friday. Friday week. And is Sam going to substitute the whole week we're gone? Do you know Sam Cedar? We are. we are joining 60 or 70 listeners to the Malloy program, and we're all going to cruise down to the Mexican Riviera. And what are we going to do when we're down there?
Try not to vomit on the ship? I don't know.
No, you get seasick. I don't get seasick.
I don't want my daughter falling overboard and being eaten by killer sharks.
She's not going to fall. Oh, my God. It's going to be one of those trips, huh? Okay. Maybe we can take off on a side trip. Let's go into Puerto Vallarta and rent a Jeep and head up in the mountains and find some... No, see, we can't do that anymore.
And not drink the water.
Because we have Molly. I was going to say go up in the mountains and find some good ganja, but we can't do that. We're responsible parents now. Jeez.
If we were responsible parents, we'd leave her on the land.
That's very true. Thanks for participating tonight, Truth Seekers. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.